Now on The Pulse, useful and healthy information for you and your family. It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio and the Northeast Delta Dental Team.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. It's hard to believe it's already the end of May. Where has the time gone? Last week we had an excellent show on Memorial Day. We had Command Sergeant Victor May, and he talked about his duties as the Field Artillery Brigade, as well as the serving as the State Family Program Director, how there was a much better support system for returning service men and women, as well as the spouse who's left behind when someone is deployed, compared to when he served in the first Gulf War. And he had a very interesting story about General Schwarzkopf being, you know, larger than life. But when he returned from the first Gulf War, there was not nearly the support system that there is now. So that was a wonderfully inspiring show. And the good news, too, was that we're able to really talk about the real point of Memorial Day. It's kind of turned into, and there's nothing wrong with this, it's kind of turned into, you know, a family cookout weekend. And that's good. Family time is always good. But it's also Memorial Day is a solemn reminder that our freedom comes, you know, at a very high price. So I want to thank again Command Sergeant Major Victor May for that great show. On the sports front, of course, we're all still suffering from the Bruins loss. But for my running friends, just want to give everybody a reminder that next weekend, Saturday, June 7th, is the fifth race in the Capital Area Race Series. It's called the Over the River and Through the Woods. Starts at One Delta, goes through the famous Root Canal, circles around, goes over 93, and across the river, and then you go into the woods, hence the term Over the River and Through the Woods. And that race raises money for the Concord Merrimack County SPCA. So that'll be the fifth race in the Capital Area Race Series. Even if you haven't registered for the series, of course, you can register for the race itself by calling 223-1287 and asking for Joe Casper, who, by the way, knows my guest today, who I'll be introducing shortly. And then the final two races of the series are the Bill Luddy 5-miler on July 19th, and then finally the Canterbury Woodchuck Classic, which is on Saturday, July 26th. For the Run for the Animals 5K, and next year I vow that this won't happen. I'm actually going to be away at my own board offsite strategic planning, so I'm going to miss my own race. I'm kind of disappointed, but I want everybody to know that I'm running again, albeit a lot slower. But I will be missing the race. But hopefully you can join us at that race, which, again, proceeds benefit the Concord Merrimack County SPCA. Now, one of the great things about this radio show, it enables us to feature community partners. And there are so many in New Hampshire that have been on our show. But a new one for us is Riverbend. And with me today is the relatively new CEO of Riverbend Community Mental Health, Peter Evers. Peter, welcome, and thank you for joining me on this weekend late in May.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
So let's start with your background, Peter. You obviously took over from Louis Josephson about October 14th, and I know since one of my colleagues, Dr. Mitch Carey, serves on the board, and I've been involved with Riverbend myself, it was, you know, a very good process they went to select the new leader of Riverbend. So tell us about that experience and how you wound your way up to New Hampshire and your background.
Sure, thanks, Tom. Well, actually, I've worked for the last 23 years in Boston. I don't know if people can tell, but my accent doesn't exactly sound very Boston, but I can certainly do a Boston accent. But I'm from the UK, originally trained there. Actually, originally in business studies and economics, but my life took a different turn when I started volunteering with Alzheimer's patients, actually back in the 80s, and worked in mental health and child protection and addiction work in London, came to Boston, did the same thing. But I think I was really intrigued, or have been intrigued in my life, with community health, community mental health. And of course, Riverbend is an agency that's been providing services to people with mental illness in their communities for 50 years, significant date this year because it's our 50th anniversary and we've got a number of different activities going on. So when I saw the job, I thought this seems like a perfect fit for me in terms of where I've been. And this is a very fast-changing landscape in mental health at the moment, which perhaps we'll get into talking about a little bit as we go forward. And also the idea of being able to garden and be out of the city was a big draw as well.
And you're also able to play soccer or football, and I see that you've broken your finger as a result. So you're in you're in an adult over 40 league or something?
That's exactly right.
We're not as young as we used to be, Peter.
Right. It's the over-the-hill soccer league.
That's too funny. But anyway, well, since you talked about the mental health journey, and I know it's the path to recovery in mental illness is not linear, why don't you take us back to way back to almost like the 1927 Supreme Court case in Virginia and how it all proceeded from there?
Sure. I mean, you know, it's interesting how mental illness has been perceived over the centuries, in fact. And I think one of the problems with mental illness is that it's perceived as a public safety issue more than a treatment and recovery issue. Back in the 20s, we were dealing with asylums, essentially large edifices in bucolic surroundings that where people would be essentially locked up. They used to call them the prisons for the innocent, people who were not charged with anything, but their behavior was out of the norm of what society decided was normal. And, you know, if you think about that, people would think about safety issues rather than the human being. And one of the low points, I think, for people with mental illness was that 1927 Supreme Court decision in Virginia, case Buck versus Bell. Oliver Wendell Holmes, who went on to be a justice at the time, decided that three generations of mental illness was enough, and really supported the idea of eugenic sterilization, that the notion of sterilizing somebody who might actually produce offspring with the same mental illness. And that really set many people on a path to correct that in terms of saying, listen, this mental illness is like any other illness. It's like diabetes. It can be treated. The notion that treatment works and the idea of getting people out of locked buildings and providing the services that help them recover as they're in their community and going about their business.
Now, your mission, Riverbend's mission, is we care for the mental health of our community, and that includes 24-hour emergency and crisis intervention services. But I know people, Peter, read in the regular press, whether it's in the Concord Monitor or Union Leader, that there's been all sorts of cutbacks in terms of funding for mental health services. So how has that impacted Riverbend's ability to serve the community? And in terms of one of the questions I always get whenever I feature a community partner is, how is the organization supported? So if there is an opportunity to you know, to give out your website in terms of people willing to make donations, I want you to feel free to do that. But tell us how the, you know, funding works and whether there's been a negative impact on your ability, you know, to deliver all these services.
Sure. If I may go back a little bit.
Sure,
to
absolutely.
1963, which was the passing of the Community Mental Health Act by Kennedy, his idea was, you know, we've got to provide resources to keep people in their communities. So the idea was, let's not do this on the cheap. Let's not empty out all of these hospitals and just have people on the streets and homeless. And so the resources had to be made available. People who have been around as long as I have probably remember the 1980s, and under the Reagan government, they had a thing called community care, which was they just took everybody out of high structured environments, and there was no real resources to put behind that. About 10 years ago or so, New Hampshire was actually first in the nation in terms of the way that they provided a network of support for people with serious and persistent mental illness. It was a real recognition of New Hampshire, Granite State's ability to work together and to fight for people's rights with the right resources. Unfortunately, in 2008, and I think everybody remembers 2008 as a pretty bad year in terms of an economic downturn, as happens often in these cases, vulnerable populations are the first to get cut. And that happened here. And it didn't just happen here, it happened all over the country. With that, services at Riverbend to provide services in the community were cut. There's no doubt about it. The idea of psychiatry being cut, the idea of social work, of case management, the idea of case managers going into people's homes. We carried on doing that, but we had less and less resources. Recently, there was a lawsuit filed by the Department of Justice that really said to New Hampshire, you know, you're not providing the services that this vulnerable population needs. And this, and the Department of Justice filed that, and there was an agreement that there would be a settlement of some $1 million that will come back into the system. And we await that readily, and that is really going to help us in terms of building up some of those services that we've had in the past. But we also rely on the generosity of individual donors and companies, including Delta Dental, I might add, and we're always happy to receive donations.
So why don't you give out that website? And of course, we feel very much a spirit of partnership, because I have the expression, you know, without good oral health, you can't have good overall health. And of course, mental health is also above the neck health, and I know you feel the same way. So why don't you give out the contact information?
Okay, sure. So our website is http://riverbendcmhc.org, and that will get you to our website, which has a number of different sections to it, the type of programs that we have. It also gives people the opportunity to donate and get involved and volunteer if they wish.
Super. So that's riverbendcmhc.org. And after the commercial break, I do want to talk about the upcoming 50th anniversary celebration and the number of things that you have planned for us. So that's great, because as you have pointed out, Riverbend is interested in being a bigger part of the community. And of course, above the neck health is so important. So in all, just about every family, some form or another is struggling with some aspect of mental illness. So I will return after commercial break with Peter Evers, who is the CEO of Riverbend Community Mental Health, Tom Raffio, Northeast Delta Dental. Please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Lisa, your Delta Dental Benefits rep. Any questions today?
How long should I brush my teeth for?
2 minutes.
Why should I visit the dentist?
Professional preventative care promotes good oral health.
What's the most popular color of toothbrush?
Blue.
She's good.
As the most experienced dental benefits company, Delta Dental delivers unmatched local service, so enrollees feel taken care of every time.
Visit Northeast Delta Dental at nedelta.com.
Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and with me this late weekend in May is Peter Evers, who's the relatively new CEO of Riverbend Community Mental Health Center. Before we get back to Peter on this most important topic of mental health, just to give everybody a little bit of an update on the Affordable Care Act. Surprisingly, or maybe not so surprisingly, close to 1,500 individuals in New Hampshire have been able to navigate the healthcare.gov, the public exchange, and have actually purchased a really cost-effective dental program for their oral health through Delta Dental. So we've been pretty pleased. We've made a huge effort financially and human resources-wise to make sure that we're certified on the exchange in New Hampshire, as well as our other two states, Maine and Vermont. And believe it or not, work already continues to be certified on the 2015 public exchange. So it never ends. And sometimes if you drive by our office over the weekend, you'll see a number of cars there. And it's not that we're behind paying claims. Actually, we process 99% of our claims like within 5 days. It's a number of us working to make sure that our plans get certified on the public exchange next year. And we have a private exchange, DeltaDentalCoversMe.com, and about 5,000 people have been able to get on that much easier website. I had kind of predicted that healthcare.gov might be difficult in the first few months of October, which is when Peter started, coincidentally. And And I know he's not responsible for the slowness of the original public exchange website. But in any event, but about 5,000 people have been able to navigate the private exchange, DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. So I think, if nothing else, I don't know if the Affordable Care Act will ultimately lower costs. The moment it hasn't. I don't know if it's going to improve access, but I can tell you that most of the thousands of people that have purchased individual products on our public exchange or the private exchange were people who did not have dental coverage before. And, of course, if you have dental insurance, 80 to 90% of that population goes to the dentist. And if you don't, only about 30%. I write about that in the book called There Are No Do-Overs that's available at Gibson's. It talks about our strategy having to do with the Affordable Care Act. Sales are going very well. And as a matter of fact, right after this show, I'll be heading to New York City for the Jacob Javits Center. There's a big, huge book fair, and I'll be signing the book along with some other authors. So this is a good segue, actually, to Peter and mental health, because that's why I feel a kinship with Peter, because one of my goals in life is to make sure people understand you can't have good overall health unless you have above-the-neck health, and that includes hearing, sight, oral health, and mental health. And so, Peter, how is insurance coverage affecting your business? In other words, with the cutbacks that you've described, some of the issues since the economy tanked in 2008, is there more or less, private dental insurance? And then in terms of people without insurance, how are they handling all this?
Yeah. I think it's a great question, Tom. I mean, I think there's been a very significant breakthrough in the last 6 months, which again, coincidentally, is since I came here. But again, I have nothing to do with it. But there's been a move by the legislature to expand Medicaid, which is a part of the Affordable Care Act. And for the behavioral health population, that is going to affect around about 7,000 people who previously were not entitled to Medicaid benefits. That would be people, single people without children, who are, I think, 133% above the poverty level. That's a significant number of people with a significant number of issues pertaining to mental health, and specifically addiction. I think one thing that is a real breakthrough is that addiction treatment will be covered under Medicaid. Initially under this first Medicaid expansion, but because you can't have two different benefits, eventually addiction services, substance misuse services will be available for all people with Medicaid, which is massive. You know, if you can't, in New Hampshire at the moment, if you got Medicaid, Medicaid will not pay for detoxification, which is the first step towards treatment. And 65% of those people who are struggling with serious mental illness also struggle with addiction. So the two really are not separable. So this is a big moment for us. We have to be able to stand up that benefit. We have to be able to hire enough people with a expertise in substance misuse treatment, which we're in the middle of doing. And we have to build a service system that is capable of meeting the needs of those people who are duly diagnosed and are diagnosed with addiction.
Now, as part of your 50th anniversary celebration kickoff, you had a presentation that I attended, back in February, and I think it resonated with so many people there that relationship between, mental health issues and drug and alcohol addiction, and I know that people may not understand that, how close, that linkage is. So part of, I know your job, like mine, is to get out in the community. So I know you've had a couple of recent events. You've hosted the Governor's Council on May 23rd, and you had an event in UNH Law on May 28th. So tell us about the purpose of those events and what was accomplished there.
Sure, Tom. As I was mentioning before, in the first segment, we have our 50th celebration this year, and we decided that we would use that platform to address the notion of stigma. And I think the way that you address stigma in mental health is that you describe and tell stories about recovery, about the fact that once you're mentally ill, it's a disease and it can be treated, and treatment works. The CDC has a lot of information on recovery in mental illness, and it's actually a better recovery rate than cardiac cath surgery. Not that they have bad outcomes in cardiac cath, but I just want to make that statement that the treatment help people with really works. The idea really was to say mental illness isn't just the seriously mentally ill. There's a continuum of that. There are very few families in this country, in fact, in the world, who are unaffected by mental illness. And having the Lincoln event, I think, really underscored that. This was a great conversation inside the mind of Lincoln at UNH Law that talked about the accomplishments of Lincoln. And entwined with that was a discussion about his mental illness. Few people know that he suffered from what they called then melancholia, and his wife also suffered terribly. Yet he was able to rise above that, manage his illness in a time when the country was being torn in two. And of course, because I'm from England, there's another story in terms of Winston Churchill, which runs along those lines. The idea really is to get out, bang the drum about recovery and say, listen, it's in every family. Forget about the stigma. Reach out for help because we can help.
I think it's so important to destigmatize it. I don't know if that's even a word. And I know that my son works for Arthritis Foundation. And the same thing there. People with arthritis, they're adults particularly, not so much the youth, but are afraid to say anything because people say, oh, you just get up and, you know, go to work, you know, whatever. And similarly, that type of stigma with mental health. So I think your educational efforts are great. And as a reminder, the Riverbend website is Riverbend, one word, cmhc.org, and there's a lot of information, and including your willingness, hopefully. I know I have a lot of CEOs. If you're willing to make and become a corporate partner, there's information on there, and as individuals, if you want to make a donation. The other thing that you've done, and this is fantastic, is by personalizing it, you had a series running in the newspaper, The Five Faces of Mental Health. Why don't you talk about how that's been working?
Yeah, again, it was another issue about normalizing and celebrating people who live with and recover from mental illness rather than themselves being defined by their mental illness. And what better way than to identify prominent people in our community who can tell their stories of struggle and recovery and bravery. And so we chose five people from the community and ran over the last two or three months in the Monitor on a Sunday, the faces of mental health, describing those people. And it was actually kicked off by Chief Justice John Broderick, who had a very public issue with mental health in his own family. And he began by telling that story, and he was our first face of mental health in early April. And people may well have seen that. But also Anne-Marie Timmons, who wrote for the Monitor and really came out and told her story. And that had such impact because she was such a well-known person in our community who told the stories of Concord. And then she decided to tell her own. And it was, I think she got 500 or so emails after that piece went out. And it did so much to bring mental health out of the shadows.
And that's a good way of putting it. And I think when, as you pointed out earlier, it's a continuum and we've all experienced it. And I think once you get it out, I think that education is so important. Now, one of the things I know that we're very interested in oral health is evidence-based practices. You know, for example, the two cleanings a year, while most plans still have that, is a good proxy, but it's really not based on evidence. I mean, some people can go one cleaning every 2 years, and some of us need four cleanings a year. So tell us how you've progressed in that area in terms of mental health as well.
Yeah, the evidence-based practice idea is not new to behavioral health. I would preface it by saying we have to be careful about what an evidence-based practice is because back in the 1940s, lobotomy was seen as an evidence-based practice because it was...
Good point. We're not advocating for lobotomy.
Right, exactly. So we have to be careful about it, but we are nowadays. There are evidence-based practices are approved by the federal government through the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Administration, SAMHSA, and they are practices and interventions which show if you apply fidelity to the work you do, they have results. At Riverbend, we have four or five different evidence-based practices. Our main one is assertive community treatment. This is a notion of people do not have to be in a hospital if they get the same, in a psychiatric hospital, if they get the same type of services at their own home. So we have a team that does med drops, that has a psychiatrist doing home visits, that has a vocational piece to it, that has a addictions recovery piece to it. And they work as a team. They round every morning as you would do in a hospital. And if you maintain fidelity to that model of intervention, people recover even with serious and persistent mental illness.
Now, I know, Peter, you're out there a lot. Quickly tell us how many employee colleagues you have, because I know being a bigger part of the community, I know like I can dry myself up trying to be everywhere, so I'm sure you have some great colleagues.
Well, I absolutely do. The staff at Riverbend are wonderful. That's why I decided to come here. I think I was interviewed by every one of them when I first came up over 2 days. About 320 employees, from psychiatrists to facilities and maintenance people to social workers to case managers, all people who are well versed in this notion of customer service, this idea of making the environment as comfortable as you can for people who have had traumatic experiences, or who have mental illness, who need to know that this is a recovery type environment.
You definitely have a great crew, very passionate. Again, the website is riverbendcmhc.org. Recovery indeed is most achievable. They need hope, acceptance, and a chance to achieve their goals, hopes and dreams, and only a committed community of caring people. Peter Evers, we're so fortunate to have you as the leader as Riverbend Community Mental Health. We'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.
Tom Raffio will return next week with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.
You said Evers at the end.